Hey, it's Super Boy, Super Boo, Super Bwee, and you're listening to Can I Kick It on WPGU.
Tuning in to Can I Kick It on WPGU, and we have a very special phone interview guest. We got Superboy in the building.
Gang.
He'll be at Canopy on Thursday. So Super, how you doing?
Man, excellent. Feeling good, feeling great. Excited to come down there and rock the house with y'all. Go crazy.
Yeah, we're excited to have you, man. Alright, so I'll just kinda get into it, because I mean the last big news was it was finally dead. That came out in December. So how have your 4 months been since then, post album release live?
And pretty insane. We went number 3 on the iTunes charts, hip hop charts. It's really, really intense. It's like a big accomplishment for me and my team. You know, we've never sold music before. Mm-hmm. And a lot of great things have come out of it. We're doing Lollapalooza this year, Panorama Fest, Flyover Fest, Hella Festivals and stuff. A lot of big moves, a lot of big money. Everything's moving up. It's crazy.
Congratulations on that, man. That's a big achievement. Overall, what would you say between that 4 months is the highlight of what you've accomplished?
The highlight, it's kind of a conglomerate, you know. It's awesome to have been able to headline the Metro, have such a great turnout, such a crazy show. It's crazy to be going to L.A., New York, you know, hitting all these headliners, people popping out. Like, I've never done headlining shows in these places, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's just really intense, you know. It's a surreal feeling to have such, like, dedicated, diehard fans that you didn't know you had, you know. And I've been doing this for, like, 10 years, never knew I had such a strong following, you know.
Yeah,
man, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, is it kind of crazy to be able to perform the album now? Like, this thing has been kind of a minute in the making, right?
Yeah, I've been holding off like at shows for like, the last 2 years, not playing anything new, just like doing old music. Mm-hmm. But it got kind of monotonous for a little bit, you know. It was not fun. But now that the music's actually out and it's moving, it's really cool. You know, it's cool. It's awesome that like every place that I've played so far, people have been singing all the words. You know, people know all the words to Black Goku and Thought Dot. It's cool, you know, like before, during the Hurt Everybody phase, I used to be in this group called Hurt Everybody. You know, we had a lot of diehard fans that, like, were singing every word to the songs, and, like, the shows were mostly the crowd instead of us. And I feel like I'm back at that point now where it's, like, there's, like, 800 people singing every word to the songs to the point where, like, I don't have to even say anything, which is, like, nuts.
Yeah, most definitely. And, I mean, hello, you still there? Hello? All right. Sorry, it was cutting off on my headphones a little bit. When I was introduced to you through your live performances, whether it's at Portage or like the Metro, and it's always been like a crazy high energy that you have. Do you think that, or is there any like influence of performances you have seen, or is that all just through the music that you've made in terms of energy?
I would say it's basically like I've always been the type where I don't do homework, I don't practice, there's none of that. There's no preparation. It's simply, I can only do what it's time to do. You know, I'm a procrastinator, and when, like, the heat is on, it's just time to go. The show must go on. Mm-hmm. And so part of that, like, that, I feel like that's why I follow, like, the punk genre so easily. It's because that's what punk is. Punk is simply, I came to give you a show, fuck you. You know what I mean? and that's basically what it is. You know, like, it's simply, like, if you don't rock with me or not, if you're not rocking with me, I'm going to come to the crowd and bully you until you rock with me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a true rock show.
Yeah, put the pressure on the audience.
I'm gonna embarrass you and exploit you about it. You know, if you're here, you pay money to rock, you're gonna rock with me or not. Like, you know, I'm against crowd, we're gonna mosh, we're gonna do flips, you're gonna go crazy, tear the venue up every single time.
No, I feel. It's kind of interesting because you're talking about kind of like the punk scene and how that's kind of influenced you. But you have a cover on your album of the Sweater Song by Weezer. Which is awesome.
Yeah, I love Weezer.
Yeah, can you kind of just talk about, I guess, how you first heard about Weezer and how much they have an influence on your music or just your life?
Yeah, my mom is from England. She really loves rock and roll. That's where I get my rock influence from. And growing up, you know, I'm older. I'm 28. So when I was growing up, there was no MP3s. I saw those, like, come into existence. And we used to have to just, like, listen to the radios and fish and sit on the radio all day long, wait for the song that you want to hear. And, like, I used to listen to Q101. For 10 hours a day just waiting to hear the Sweater Song, me and my mom all the time. And I'm hoping that, like, you know, they hear it or something, and it acts as a bridge so I can, like, you know, go up with the band, because I really like Weezer. I really like Weezer. I think they're extraordinarily creative. I think they're very edgy but not too serious. It's just like good alternative 90s rock, which is why I think hip-hop is falling into right now. Hip-hop is kind of entering like a very 90s alternative rock era where it's the era of weirdos and unique people and not necessarily people falling victim to critics. You know, the critics really have no power in hip-hop these days, which is a good and bad thing, you know?
I feel, you know, I totally agree with that. Hip-hop's in the phase where, like, there's becoming of subgenres of every single type of subgenre. Like, a lot of it's punk, like what you do. But other than Weezer, what other, like, rock bands or alternative bands influence you in your music style?
Metallica, Godsmack, just heavy dish, Machine Head, Mudvayne, Depeche Mode, you know, the old gothy stuff. This very melodic, introspective, heavy music. Things that make you think beyond, like, you know, just money and you know, whatever you're trying to accomplish in that moment. Things that make you think about, like, death and life and is there an afterlife and what are my ambitions and am I sentient and just deeper ideas, things that are thought-provoking. I like really thought-provoking music. I feel like that's something that, like, rock in general is very good at and hip-hop lacks in, but this new generation of artists is really bringing that to the forefront in hip-hop, which is awesome.
So I just have a quick question. So do you think it's weird or do you think it's cool to see, like, so many people taking style, like, your style and making it mainstream in the current rap scene, like, for, like, all the punk awesome. Rap scene?
I think it's really good. I think it's amazing. I'm happy for it because that means me, like, I've been doing this for 10 years, since I was 17, 18 years old. But there's an 18-year-old me, and there's a 17-year-old me who now has the opportunity to go ahead and make that happen. Whereas, like, when I was doing this, when I was 18, in 2008, 2007, mm-hmm. people were not into it. People were not into the screaming, not into the singing. People barely liked Drake in 2008, so they were really not messing with me at all. You know, and it's cool. The only downside is, you know, it's really easy to get lost in the noise. You know, like, I got a couple, I don't know to call them, rivals, children, whatever it is, and they're splashing, but in hip-hop, it's not cool to say, I'm influenced by, I like, I learned this from, and people just kind of run off with your sauce. So in that aspect, it's not cool, it's kind of lame, mm-hmm, yeah. But at the same time, I'm glad that, like, Little Angry Black Boys can now, are now accepted. You know, it's cool. It's now, like, you're not going to get made fun of and ostracized for it, and that's dope to me.
I feel. And you kind of brought up the new generation, and especially now in Chicago, I mean, the past almost 10 years, it's been a crazy renaissance in terms of the scene and all that. Has it been kind of crazy just, like, just interacting with everyone in the scene from, like, Chance to now with Cole Bennett and stuff like that?
Yeah, it's kind of something you don't notice happening, but, like, sometimes I sit down and I'll think, you know, like, 4 years ago, Cole wasn't where he is today, you know yeah. what I mean? 6 years ago, Channel isn't or wasn't where he is today, you know? Last year, I wasn't where I am today. While it's happening, while everybody's working and we having fun and doing our thing, moving back and forth, you don't really feel it happening. You don't know that you're in the middle of something important. You don't know that you're building something that's going to actually matter tomorrow. But it's cool. It's just a testament to who belongs here and who doesn't. You know, like, all the kids who were here 5 years ago doing this, grinding hard, are the ones who are on top now, you know? And the ones who kind of laid off and dilly-dallied are still where they are. And it's just a testament of time and tenacity and everybody getting to where they're supposed to be. You know, if you really want to get it, if you really want to be relevant and control the culture, you have to give yourself to the culture. And those who did are now on top.
Yeah, totally. And Chance the Rapper and Cole Bennett are a great example of that. And, you know, Cole's at the top of the game right now. Chance has been at the top of the game.
Exactly. How did you at an early age gave himself to the game?
Yeah, true. Totally.
Cole at a super early age gave himself to the game. And you know, he was out here doing them videos for free, grinding, you know, out here asking, let me do a video, let me do a video, let me get this, let me work. And he was working and working and working. And now today, a full-blown celebrity, you know, that's real life. It can happen to anybody.
Yeah, and how did you end up linking with Cole Bennett in the first place? Did he come up and ask you to do a video just for free with you?
No, I knew Cole before the videos and all that. Like, oh, before any of that. That's when Cole was just like, when he just started Lyrical Lemonade, his first shows were Hurt Everybody shows, my old band. And the first few shows actually were Hurt Everybody shows. And we were just like, you know, we didn't really have anything going. He didn't have anything going. He was a really hard working kid. I think he was like 16, 15 when I first met him, you know? And I just really believe in him. You know, I like his tenacity. Young men who want to move forward, who are doing things that I deem awesome, that I think are extraordinary for their age, I can't help but help them, you know, because when I was 18, nobody was trying to rap with me. Nobody wanted to organize. Nobody wanted to go to shows or any of that. It was just super dry. Everybody wanted to consume, but no one wanted to create. So when I see young creatives, I can't help but just like, let's get it. Let's, I don't care. Let's go, you know? Cole was one of those, and it happened to be just like a good bet, you know?
Yeah, he's a great guy.
And you said, you were talking about earlier how you've been doing this since like 2008. In terms of your music and how that's evolved, can you kind of talk about that a little bit? Like, what kind of music were you making way back then in 08?
I honestly think the music is the same, except for maybe the content. You know, I'm a little bit more, I don't want to use the word woke, but just responsible, you know?
Yeah.
I don't really want to say, like, the wild things I used to say because I don't necessarily feel that way. And beyond that, I'm a full-blown adult now. I'm 28, so, like, I don't really want to be seen in the same light. I don't want to be so unpredictable, disrespectful, wild, you know, toxic. I don't want to be as toxic as I was before. If you are emanating the energy and you are always just like just pumping out that hate, it affects you and it'll burn you out and you'll bring that result around you all the time. I had a rough patch where like for 3 years people were just trying to kill me and fight me all the time and hurt me just because of the music I was putting out. And I realized, you know, I was summoning that energy. I was bringing that energy to myself. So in order to just, like, not necessarily avoid it, but just to lead a healthier life, I have to just make healthier music in general.
No, definitely. Is it kind of interesting to be, like, blowing up at this age compared to, like, the Lil Pumps who are kind of coming up at 16?
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, I've never had that, like, viral thing or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is cool, you know, like, I don't mind. I'm not upset with my taste or anything. I'm happy, like, to be continuously growing. You know, every year the socials are doubling. Every year, the money's going higher and higher.
I feel.
It's kind of weird because we're in that era where it's like, unless you're popping right now, unless you explode overnight, you're not going to be a star. You're not going to be this. You're not going to be that. A lot of people are really, like, hedonistic-minded and, like, kind of just think that everything works on this, like, weird social catch-me-outside-girl time period. And like, that's not how it works, you know?
Yeah, I feel like
my journey isn't necessarily fame. If I wanted to be famous, I would just tap my face and shoot somebody, you know? But like, that's not my goal. I want to make music that's going to stand the test of time and be able to be a leader in the culture. I want to be a voice that's listened to and respected within the culture, not just like a hot topic for 3 months, you know?
No, I feel. And I mean, part of your journey and how I was introduced to you was a couple years back with like Hurt Everybody. Is it what have you learned from that in terms of working with in a group compared to being your own solo artist?
I learned that if you go work in a group and take that leadership position, you gotta really live that life. It's kind of a very selfless and thankless position, and you have to be okay with that. And I just learned that I wasn't ready for that at all.
I feel
still too young to really share and grow in a group setting. When you're in a group, it's so important to love the people you're with. It's very important to listen to and to foster their growth.
Yeah,
and kind of your growth on the back burner. And I kind of forgot that along the path when you were in the group, you know?
I feel.
Yeah, and earlier you said that critics not having power is good and bad. In what cases is it bad for the critics not to have a say in what's popular and what's not?
It's bad because if you lose critical voices and critical thought, that's how you end up with just regurgitated, monopoly popular music, you know? This person is socially popular, so we're going to find them and give them all this attention and make this the new norm, you know?
Mm-hmm.
When it's not even good, it's not listenable, it's not good music, period. It's not about the content or anything. It doesn't matter what it's about. It just ends up being just like trash music. And we see a lot of that today. I'm not going to call anybody out because it's not my place. I'm not trying to start nothing. But we have a lot of that in our current like hip-hop climate. And, I think it's also cool because then I remember the days when the blogs ran things. I remember when having a blog post and a premiere was life or death for your song. And, you know what I mean? That's all you were worried about. And I hated that. You know, I don't want some white kid who's 21 deciding whether or not my song's hot. You know, this white kid who never felt anything in his life that's even close to like poverty or coldness or hunger or loss or hurt or pain. You know, I don't want somebody like that in charge of my destiny. Whereas on the other side, it would be nice to have somebody critically be like, hey, this guy's got bars, this guy's got lyrics, listen to this rather than this person who's obviously off four Xanax when he recorded this.
Yeah, definitely.
I feel like that's not very sustainable in the long run. Compared to you, who's 20 years old and has been grinding, you know, for since 2008, you know, you really built the foundation for yourself.
Yeah, no, it pisses me off when, like, when some, like, 18-year-old kid is just like, yeah, Cooper's okay, this mediocre flow about this so-so story and la la la. It's like, bro, like, I almost died. Like, this is real life. Like, I almost, like, this song you're critiquing is about my near-death experience. Like, and this kid who's writing about that will never in his life even come close to a near-death experience until he has a heart attack because he's too wealthy and out of shape, you know?
Yeah. Can't compare that.
I feel. And like, listening to Finally Dead, there's, like, a range of emotions and stories on there. Do you feel like that was kind of, that's your opus so far in terms of, like, this is Supa?
Yeah, I feel like so far, like, that's, like, the best representation of a period of life that I've given so far. I guess that's the best way I can put it. Like, even right now, I feel like I, even at this point, I've outgrown Finally Dead. I don't feel as connected as I did to it 4 months ago, but it's accurate. Originally, Finally Dead, I was in a really dark spot, like, two, three years ago when I first started it. And my initial plan was just to leave a body of music behind, sell it, and also have all my old body of work put on iTunes. And I was going to off myself and just, like, have it out there so that my sister can get the publishing off it, you know? Like, at least, like, my sister can clean up off of it. And the original, it was really just, like, a parting shot. The original project was, like, really negative, just, like, a shot at everybody who I thought had slighted me in life.
Uh-huh.
And as I was going through that, I met different people in my life and had different support systems introduced to me, and it helped me get out of that phase, that feeling that nothing's going to get better, I'm just going to leave, that feeling that I had. And it became, rather than like an obituary, it turned into kind of a story of triumph. You know, there's dark parts in it. I Hate Being Alive, Cloud Daddy. You know, there's those dark songs in there, but then there's things like Up Right Now, and there's things like, you know, Black Goku, where it's me kind of just like, you know, I'm up right now. I was down for a while, I'm down for a count, I'm counting up right now. That song to me represents, like, for months, it was like a 6 month period where I wasn't getting no money, I wasn't getting no shows, nobody was like messing with me no more. People, they saw that my mental stability was slipping, and they were taking advantage of it, you know, whether it be people trying to take money from me, or people just trying to finesse me out of my equipment or anything, you know? I had a lot of just pressure, and I wasn't handling it well. But, you know, I got a new support system. The music changed as I changed, and the project ended up, you know, going number three because of the changes I made, you know?
Yeah, most definitely.
I'm really happy with that, you know?
No, most definitely. And you mentioned Black Goku. There's also a Sailor Moon reference. There's a Thanos reference, which leads to my next question. When you were growing up, besides from music, what were some of your biggest, like, cultural influences?
Growing up, my dad was a very secretive geek. He had a chest full of, like, comic books and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
And my dad, like, he's the one who put me on Dragon Ball Z, all that kind of stuff. I had a very limited childhood. I grew up in the hood, but my dad was very protective and didn't want me outside dealing with things. So I was just on punishment 24/7. And I didn't have a lot of freedom to express myself. I have a military cop dad, you know, there's just no freedom for anything. And I found freedom in Dragon Ball Z and reading stories like Animal Farm and stuff like that. And even to this day, it kind of still sticks with me. I spent so much of my childhood, like Thanos, for example, my dad had the Infinite Gauntlet comic book series, and I read the entire thing like 12 times. Mm-hmm. And out of that, as like an 8-year-old kid, I'm reading about Thanos and his fascination with death, and how he wanted to get rid of half the universe to appease death. And in a weird way, in my mind, I connected with Thanos just because of his origin story. You know, I felt like Thanos was a purple-skinned alien, and on his planet, he was a mutant. He was different, and people hated him simply because of his skin. And I felt that way because I lived in Oak Park, where I moved from the West Side, and people hated me because of my skin. The white kids didn't really want to hang out with me. The parents didn't want me to stay over and play. You know, they watch me extra close when I'm playing with their toys. And because of the way he was treated, he just, you know, he began to hate all those things that everybody else loved. And he began to draw himself towards the things that people were afraid of because he learned that fear was equals power. And I felt like I went through that phase myself where it's like, okay, I'm going to get me a little gun and I'm going to do this and that. so I can have my power, you know? Mm-hmm. And there are just so many similarities between Thanos and just, like, the average black American male that he became, like, a staple in my life. Sailor Moon, for example, that's not really, like, a series I really watched or enjoyed, but, like, it was just cool as hell. Like, I always thought it was, like, just, like, a cool-ass little flashy anime or whatever. And I know that, like, you know, all the shorties, like, just love Sailor Moon. Shorties love Sailor Moon just like they love Hello Kitty, all that, la, 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 la.
Yeah.
And, like, Goku, everybody knows Dragon Ball Z, obviously. But, you know, recently in Dragon Ball Z, but Goku, you know, Goku got wished back and he got turned evil. It would take too long to explain. Black Goku is basically, if Goku was me or you, you know, like what we would do if we were Goku. None of us would be trying to save the world, you know what I'm saying? Everybody's like, you know what? One world under me. I'm Black Goku.
Yeah, no, so, like, you're obviously hugely into, you know, a lot of other stuff, but was music always your only choice in for a path in life, or did you have other interests that you wanted to pursue, too?
No, I was going to go into early childhood education, but my dad went to jail and screwed up all my college money staying out of jail. He got hit with, like 60, something, a lot of years, hella years, mm-hmm. and he spent, like $2 million to make sure he didn't go to jail for the rest of his life. And he ended up getting, like, 5 years or something like that, and I didn't go to college. So because I didn't go to college, I was already rapping a little bit, and I decided, you know, like, growing up, I didn't really have, like, a lot of a big outlook on life. You know, nobody in my family ever really became anything. All the men in my family have all been in jail. They all are just, like, thugs. You know what I mean? Reform thugs, turn preacher, la, la, la. You know, it's just, like, the same old story.
Yeah.
And so, like, I always thought, like, I'm either going to be crime god or go to the military or be a cop or be dead, you know? And I didn't really want to pursue the rap stuff fully until I was about, like, 19, 18 years old. 19, I was watching an interview with Soulja Boy. Soulja Boy had this remote-controlled car chain, and it had diamonds on it, everything. And the man was so rich, he took off his chain and started driving his chain around the parking lot. And I see diamonds falling off and everything. And, like, I was thinking to myself, like, this nigga has no talent. Like, I'm so cold at rapping. There's no way. Like, why am I living like this? Like, if I can do this, I'm gonna have a diamond remote control car. And that's how, like, that was my initial, just like, I have to do this. I have to go get it. That's my only way to make a million. But then, you know, as you start to, like, do something and you obsess over it and you love it and you learn about it, you actually learn the culture and what it means and what it's about. It became more about, I want to be the god MC. I want to be the strongest, the best, the wisest, the fastest, the most impressive MC. I want to be Lil Wayne 2.0. And that was my mission. And after a while, you know, after like year 7, year 8, you don't even care about any of that. After a while, it's just what you do. I don't do nothing else. I can't do nothing else.
Yeah.
I don't want to do nothing. And I'm grateful and blessed to be able to pay rent and do the things I do off music. But I'm trying to reach that next point. And reaching that point is really the hardest part. You know, every musician's struggle is just trying to find the next listener, you know? And I feel like as long as we remain consistent with the message, stick to what we know and stick to what we do best, it'll be fine. Everything will work out.
Hey, you got to keep grinding, you know?
I feel. What do you think that next point looks like for you? Like, when do you think you've made it? At what point?
When will I think I've made it?
Yeah. Is it the
when
the car?
I have what my rivals and my teammates have, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, to another amateur, it might seem like I've made it, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. To somebody else from the outside, it might seem like I'm there. But once you're on the inside, you really see what it looks like, and you see the gap in between you and the next man, you know what I mean? Like, until I can get it like Keno, and I got like a $4 million condo, you know, I'm not there yet. Until I can give millions of dollars to a school system, I'm not there yet. Until I can, you know, take my family to Turks and Caicos, I'm not there yet. Uh-huh. Until I can get it, until there's no more left to get, I'm not there.
I feel.
At Apex. Well, one of my ideals is Apex, the idea of Apex, the word, the feeling, the meaning, and what an Apex to me is a never reachable height. It's an unattainable height. It's something that should be aimed for. It's something you're supposed to try and achieve every day when you wake up. There's an apex to run after, but it can never be. It can never be achieved. Like perfection, you can never be perfect. You can only work towards it. I feel that way about success. Success isn't a destination you can just arrive to. It's just something to continuously chase. Every day you wake up, it's a little bit further, and you get a little bit closer, and you sleep, and you wake up, and blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel. I mean, like, this summer is looking pretty lit. You're playing Lala, you're playing Panorama, which are these crazy festivals. But I guess, what is it like coming to play to a college crowd? Is it compared to just playing venues in Chicago?
I've done lots of college shows. I love the college shows. Like, that for me is, like, it's just, like, crazy. You know, it's fun because, like, even right now, going to Kennedy Club, I remember, like, when I was, like, 17 all the way through, like, 20, trying to sneak in the Kennedy Club all the time. Like, driving down to U of I with my homies, like, for unofficial and all that stuff, mm-hmm. and just trying my hardest every night to see, hey, dude, let me use your ID. Any black guy walking past, just trying to use their ID to get in. And it's, like, it's cool because, like, now I'm about to, like, actually be in there, like, on stage performing. I always think about that kind of stuff, you know? Like, I played House of Blues recently. Yeah. It was cool because one of my first shows ever was at the House of Blues. I was there with my friend's big brother's tour's ATL. He was a Marine. And, like, it was nuts. Like, I was looking into the crowd. I'm like, damn, like, my homie killed himself right there. Like, his leg don't work no more. And, oh, I got punched right there. I lost my wallet. Oh, man. Like, you know what I mean? I got escorted out from my security right there. And for me, that's the most enjoyable part. It's like looking at where you were 7 years before, looking at where you were 10 years, 4 years before, and like now you're on the other side. You know, that side that you never thought you'd be on.
No, most stuff.
Yeah. So you just released. So you released Finally Dead, right? What do you have planned in the future? Or have you started working on anything new? Or are you just touring right now, trying to get your name out there?
Just lots of shows right now, trying to keep the project moving. Mm-hmm. I want to drop another project, no thanks. I got another project also I'm working on with my homie Greg, Six Gems. And at the moment, we're just gathering music, just trying to make sure it's new, trying to make sure it's clean, trying to make sure it's edgy, it's still moving, it's still fluid. And at the same time, you know, got to make sure that Finally Dead gets what it's supposed to get. I want to make sure people actually hear it without doing my usual, like, oh, it's been 4 months, here's two more projects.
Yeah. I feel. Dang, you got a project with Six. That's pretty lit. That's dope. That's all we got for you. Is there anything you want to say to the U of I listeners right now who all be popping out on Thursday at the Canopy Club, 9 p.m.?
Man, pop out to Canopy Club. It's going to be very lit. I'm True. Kicking in the crowd all night. I'm buying drinks for everybody all night. Come party with the kid. Everybody's invited except for Lambakai members. Because I never forgot what happened.
Oh, okay.
Hey, bet air horns if we had those.
Yeah. I'm just kidding. No.
All right, bet. Hey, Supa, we appreciate having you on, man.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
All right.